for the longest time. It is about damn time. Welcome to Blah Blah Wrestling. It's been a while. Today's episode is a little bit different because Sean is not with us. Sean and Joe aren't with us. They were so distraught by the Festival of Friendship. They are in, I guess, a safe space somewhere, bundled up, trying to, you know, recover from what we saw on Monday Night Raw. But instead, in their place, we have a surprise guest. But first, Benny, of course, with you. We have Steve. How you doing, buddy?
Yeah, I'm good.
And joining us on the podcast for the second time, you've heard him before during the draft episode. You got to go back a while. We have Sir Thomas DiNapoli. I put the sir in there. I don't know if you're actually knighted yet, but you do the M&T show now. I believe that's what it's called, correct?
Yeah, so basically I moved my podcast from YouTube to actually Podbean on TuneIn Radio. Me and my buddy did it because with the old one, the best viewership we got was wrestling, so now we have a wrestle-centric show. I'm not knighted yet, but I'm on my way.
There we go. Well, let's get down to it. We're wrestling fans. We watched Elimination Chamber, and we're going to give you our quick review of it really quick because a lot happened, and you know, lots been talked about, but we have some insight on what's going on. We have our own opinions. You definitely want to listen to this. So let's dive into Elimination Chamber. And let's start with the pre-show. A match that came out of left bleeping field, Steve. Were you hype for Mojo Rawley versus Curt Hawkins?
I was not at all. I was absolutely not into this match.
I love how the build for it is, oh, Mojo Rawley, you know, Rob Gronkowski's friend. Like, that's a gimmick he's having. Like, Mojo Rawley's gimmick has become, he is the guy that drinks a lot of Red Bull, runs around, is a former football player, and oh, he's Rob Gronkowski's friend. Oh, man, how interesting.
Yeah, it's like, great. No, that's good, I guess.
Tom, were you excited for Mr. Hype?
No. Basically, this was the battle of Zack Ryder's tag teammates.
Yeah, Curt Hawkins. Oh, my God, it was. I completely forgot. Yeah.
Curt Hawkins and Mojo Rawley. Do you know what the thing with Mojo Rawley is? I feel like Vince wants to give him somewhat of a push because he's kind of big and he used to be an NFL athlete, but he has like a Connor from the Ascension body. He's just gross, for lack of a better term.
He you know what he has? He has the typical meathead body. Like, he is that a kid in high school that was a defensive end linebacker, drank beer all the time and bench pressed and never did anything else. So,
and then went to bootleg U, still drank more beer, hooked up with the grossest girls, and yeah, that's Mojo Rawley.
He's the guy now.
What's up, Playboy?
What's up, Playboy? He's the guy that sits at the corner now, and whenever you go to the bus stop to go to your job or whatever, you're driving by him, he just goes, "Hey, remember the time we were in high school?" And it was like, "Yeah, that was 10 years ago, Mojo. Let's move on." So that's the character of Mojo Rawley. Oh, man. Well, anyway, we got hype for the opening match. It was Becky Lynch versus Mickie James.
No, we didn't.
We did not?
Well, not for the pre-show match with Mojo Rawley.
I can comfortably say I was not hype.
I was waiting for you to make more Cosmopolitans.
Oh, yes. me and Tom watched it together, and because Stone Cold Steve Austin approved of the Cosmopolitans, I decided to make my specialty. So let's just say
he approved Cosmopolitans. He approves green apple teenies.
He did approve green apple teenies.
That's our next weird drink. It's gotta be.
You know what? WrestleMania. Benny the bartender will come back out, and we'll make green apple teenies, and we'll all get lit off that. But
oh no!
Yes, Steve.
Gosh, I can't wait to embrace my inner older sister.
Well, I don't know if Mickie James or Becky Lynch enjoying a green apple teeny. Becky Lynch definitely is not an apple teeny person. She seems more like a mimosa type person. But anyway, she
the Guinness person.
Yes, she opens the show with Mickie James, defeats her. I'm not so sure I enjoy the booking of Mickie James so far, but she is, you know, of course, the established superstar. We know about her. We know that she's a former women's champion. Yada, yada, yada. She's been in the main event scene before. But I don't think – what was it? But prior to Elimination Chamber, I can't recount when she's won a match. Yeah, they lost the tag match. She lost at NXT. So you bring her in. Of course, you know, she's the established star, but Steve, you give her a loss on pay-per-view to Becky Lynch. I thought maybe give her a dirty heel win, get some heat on her.
Nah, I mean, I feel like I feel like Mickey's an established star. Like, she has the history to back herself up. She can afford to lose a little pay-per-view match like this. Whereas Becky needs to win feuds bad right now. She's been kind of, not floundering, but she hasn't been doing as good as she should. So I feel like it was okay to have Becky win this. But as far as the match goes, I thought it was pretty good, and I was glad to see Becky win.
You know, it's interesting, Steve, you bring up Becky Lynch Flannery, because I kind of get the same feel. I even said it after Becky won the championship. She's a better chaser than she is the chasee, if so to speak.
She's got that, like, Rey Mysterio syndrome.
Yes.
Or even Dean Ambrose, too. You know, you're going for the title, you're like, yeah, then they have it, and you're just like,
you want them to win it, but you don't want them to be the champion type of thing. Where it's like you root for them because, oh, they're so cool, everything about them. But when they become champions, it's their character just loses that oomph, you know?
Because you're not the underdog anymore. You're the champion.
And that's the kind of thing. Tom, really quickly, your opinion of Becky Lynch, Mickie James?
You know, it's not going to hurt Mickie James's legacy to, you know, if she loses for the next year, it's not going to hurt her legacy. It's already set in stone. Becky needed it more than Mickie. I don't love it, but you know what? I do agree with the decision.
My only argument is maybe you want to build up Mickie a little bit and then make this into a Mania feud. But nonetheless, in the end of the day, you guys both are right. It's not going to ruin her legacy, but it's just, you know, at some point, she's going to need to get a big win. She did on SmackDown, but she's going to need to get a big, definitive win. And it came, and I'd like to see maybe one more, and then you can probably move her on to a feud with Naomi or something like that and help establish the title. But anyway, all right, let's move on to a very odd handicap match, or I'll call it a handy crap match because that's what it was. The baby faces outman the heel. Okay. Yeah,
that was new for me too. I was kind of like, wait a minute.
So
I mean, I feel like the match wasn't great, but I feel like they handled it good with kind of Ziggler popping out and taking out Kalisto in the beginning.
Going into this, I thought it was going to be a train wreck. It wasn't a good match. I mean, it had its moments, but going into it, it's like they want to build heat for Dolph Ziggler, so they make him the underdog. I just don't know. Ziggler's heel turn so far has been rather iffy. But you get Apollo, No Charisma Cruz, and Kalisto. Oh, well, I guess we still have to pay this guy. You know, obviously the baby faces get the win, but it's a shallow win, Tom. It's one of those wins where it's like, okay, you guys win, but it's like when you're a 32-year-old man and a 5-year-old girl insults you, and then you go over and you start running down insults on her, but it's like, dude, it's a 5-year-old girl.
That's like if me and my brother were playing a basketball game, and it was us two against you. Obviously, we're going to win, and then, of course, you're going to get mad and throw the basketball at my face at the end, because, wow, that's completely not fair. And that's what Ziggler did with the chair. I feel like Cruz, I just, like you said, no charisma. Stop smiling. Call me an a-hole. Call me a d-bag. Like, something. Make me not like you, because you're not doing much to make me like you. Kalisto's just, again, no character. Ziggler, I think he works better as a heel just because he's kind of cocky and arrogant, but he hasn't done anything yet. And when you put him in meaningless feuds, honestly, what would probably be good now is if him and Corbin feuded now, not last year in 800 pre-shows. Now that Corbin's character is built up, but then again, that's kind of heel. But besides the point, you know, it was just a weird match. I didn't like it and love it. I actually didn't like anything about it.
It's a shame because the Ziggler heel turn had so much potential. Like, we bought it, you know. Dolph Ziggler was chasing the, you know, WWE Championship. Loses. Can't get it. Can't beat Dean Ambrose. Then he goes on to The Miz, can't beat The Miz, or does beat The Miz, but just can't shake off the ghost of his past. Finally does, loses the title back to Miz, goes chasing AJ Styles very briefly, and then turns heel. I could buy that, okay, obviously, you know, as a character, I need to change the way I'm doing things in order to be an established champion. Goes on to be a heel, and then you put him in an odd feud. If this was just Ziggler versus Cruz, I'd buy it. I'd probably be interested, you know, because I think Cruz probably would show me some things. There were flashes for Cruz's character. This has been frustrating, Steve. So your opinion of the 2-on-1 handicap match, and I know you were not excited when this was announced.
Yeah, I thought it was silly because, like you guys have stated, just two faces on one. It's like, why put the heel at a disadvantage? The baby faces are made to be put at a disadvantage so that they can overcome adversity, because that's how they like gain favor, because they overcome insurmountable odds and, you know, get the win. I just thought it was silly from the get-go. I liked how Ziggler kind of like played the heel role, right, and took out Kalisto in the beginning. I knew he was going to lose. But of course, you know, I figured there was going to be something coming after. Of course, he pulled out his favorite chair again and beat the crap out of Cruz and Kalisto. I would like to point out that the crowd was chanting, "Thank you, Ziggler." So obviously, Cruz and Kalisto weren't the best people to put against him if the crowd is happy that he beat the snot out of them. But, you know, this match was pretty silly and forgettable to me.
I vaguely remember, that wasn't Kalisto, that was Sin Cara. I get them mixed up all the time. But Kalisto just doesn't get, neither one, Apollo Crews, they don't get reactions when they come out. It's just like, oh, it's them again. Cruz desperately needs the MVP character applied to him. And I believe, Steve, you brought that up months ago, that an MVP character would fit Apollo. And every day I wake up, I go, that is a great idea. They need to do that with Apollo
Crews. I think either I said that or Sean said that, but regardless, it would work good with
them. It's a great idea. Like, that's what the character needs. Speaking of needing something, the tag titles, the tag division in SmackDown is starting
to get
really, really bad. Sean,
it's such a shame, too. It started out so much potential. You know, we've been saying potential. It just reminds me of the Geico commercial with Pinocchio, that you've got potential, and that's kind of what I'm doing with this tag.
You've got potential.
Yeah, I'm just pointing at them and saying that.
It's a shame because literally half of their division is a comedy act. Breezango, or whatever the hell they're calling him. Comedy act. Slater and Rhino.
Fashion police
comedy act. It's getting to the point with the Ascension where we don't buy them as, you know, credible, you know, challengers. The vaudevillains, and I know Thomas is going to piss you off, the vaudevillains have been treated like trash.
I'll get to that.
The Usos have done well, but they lose a lot. And they're hurt a lot, so we, you know, their promos are cool. They have kind of a Crime Time feel. And what was Crime Time? A comedy act. So anyway, we get to a tag team turmoil match. WWE SmackDown tag team champions. Very odd that the champions come out fifth. That was a very weird decision.
It was silly. They literally said they would beat every team in this match, and they came out at the end.
Which
they came out, I mean, champion's advantage,
I guess.
I suppose, but why cut a promo saying they're going to beat every team in this match if they don't face every team in this match?
Yeah, like it'd be like, of course, as you think, tag team champions, they should come out first. They should fight against the entire division. If they're fighting champions, like you said, Steve.
They said they'd take on the entire division. They said they'd fight everybody, and they didn't.
Maybe they audibled because they didn't want them to bury the entire division, but that's already kind of being done. But to have them come out fit, like, I could buy third. I could. I'd be like, okay, you know, random draw, you get third. They still have to go through two other teams to go through the entire thing. I get it. Or three other teams in this case to go through the entire thing. I get it. I buy it. But I just don't understand the rationale behind it. And Steve, that's why I'm going to go to you first. They eliminate the Ascension, who now, especially after what happened on SmackDown, the Ascension looks bad. And I mean, like, they're better than what they were, but they're bad now because they couldn't beat them via the Usos attack, and they can't beat them again the night after. It's getting bad.
I thought that was really silly. I've stated it for the record on this podcast, and I will say it again. I have always been a fan of the Ascension. I like them. I like the Ascension. I love them in NXT, and I was hoping for good stuff when they come up to the main roster. But then they made those comments about the Legion of Doom, and that really hurt them. They got a lot of bad heat for that. But I feel like that I feel like that they have moved past that now. And if there's any heat still from that, I feel like it should leave. I feel like they paid their dues. They took a lot of heavy losses. They've been kind of taken not seriously. I feel like it should just pass. The fact that the Usos put a hell of a beatdown on American Alpha, like just vicious beatdown, and then Ascension comes right out of the gate, hits their tag team finisher, and can't get the pin, that makes them look utterly silly. It makes them look utterly stupid. And then that for them to catch a huge pin like that, like they did, it's just like the majority of the teams on the SmackDown tag team roster, we can't take seriously, and it's silly and it's stupid. This is where we need Revival to come into the picture now. This is where we need new teams, because the SmackDown tag team division is just failing, in my opinion.
And we're going to take a quick detour before we head to Tom here. It's interesting you bring up the Revival, because NXT, it does not look like it, for a while, it looked like the Revival were on their way up. It looked like, the Revival aren't doing anything. Obviously, they're on their way to the main roster. Such is not the case. And now it looks like they're going to be in this triple threat for TakeOver Orlando. And now it's like, okay, well, what the hell does SmackDown do? And we kind of got a hint of that on SmackDown. But anyway, Tom, really quickly, your opinion of the tag team turmoil match, which is ironic because the tag team division is in turmoil.
Huh. Yeah, it's just, you knew they were going to come out and they were going to defend Jordan and Gable. And, I'm perfectly fine with that. The Usos, I liked their heel turn and I still like them. But like you say, they lose a lot. Now, honestly, remember, Zack Ryder won a tag team battle royal for the Hype Bros, but tore his patella tendon. So maybe that would have been a thing, but I love Zack Ryder, trust me. I'm a huge Zack Ryder fan.
Really quickly, you bring up the Hype Bros. They kind of are another, we can't take them seriously either.
Yeah, Zack Ryder's 32, Mojo Rawley's a failed NFL player. I can't take the, I just snorted a bunch of cocaine, now I'm going to go wrestle gimmick. So the vaudevillains, it's simple. They were faces in NXT. The whole crowd cheered them at NXT TakeOver Brooklyn when they won. So what do? You turn them heel, then bring them up. Also, when they were with the New Day, that chase wasn't terrible. Wasn't great, but wasn't terrible. So they could do some good things, but they're just so buried. I love their gimmick, but Vince doesn't get it, so he doesn't get the vaudevillains. The Ascension looked like they were going to be taken seriously. They're not. Probably doesn't get that gimmick. Hype Bros, I hate that gimmick. Jordan and Gable are good. Usos lose too much. Who am I leaving out here? Someone.
Slater and Rhino.
They're it's just like, couple.
They've already broken up before, I believe.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you're different. You're different. Yeah, there's nothing there. I think Jordan and Gable, yeah, they're face, but I think they truly need a real baby face, tag team that the crowd could really get behind. Because, yeah, you have the Usos or heels, I guess the Ascension or heels, but you need someone the crowd could really get behind. And again, of course, my pick would be the vaudevillains, but that's not going to happen. But that being said, it's just, I guess it's time for some new faces.
They desperately need, maybe DIY. DIY might do some good on SmackDown, but we'll get into NXT later, but there's a lot of ways they can do this. They need help though. Okay. Enough about the tag team championship. That's in dire straits. Another rivalry that's in dire straits is Nikki Bella and Natalya. All right. Well, a double count out. That's the equivalent of a middle finger there, Steve.
God.
More of this. More of a, you're stupid. John Cena doesn't like you. You have ugly faces. I don't like you. You smell bad. Are you up for more of that?
No, I'm not.
What was your opinion of the match?
It was flat. It was just not what happened afterward. The thing that really tickled me was they build this as the match to end their feud. And of course it ends in a double countout. I mean, why not? It's silly.
Typical WWE booking.
What happened backstage was funnier with Nikki spilling all of Maurice's coke all over the ground.
That was 2000. Yeah, you got the powder everywhere. I'm like, why does Maurice have powder?
That was like $2,000 worth of coke just spilled all over the place.
Somewhere Pablo Escobar went.
That's what's gonna start their feud or whatever, the supposed mixed tag match at Mania. Maurice is gonna come out and be like, Nikki Bella, you spilled on my coke.
It's gonna be the cocaine feud. Oh yeah. What is up with SmackDown
gonna,
and cocaine?
They're gonna suspend a bag above the ring. It's gonna be a ladder match.
I got it from Mojo Rawley.
Coke on a pole probably. Match.
Well, Mojo was like, what's up, Playboy? Need some.
It's everyone on SmackDown's on cocaine. That's why it's such a good show. Everyone's just like, oh my God. I've never felt more alive. Tom, Nikki Bella versus Natalya.
It's so dumb. So here's the thing, Benny, you know Sarah. So she watches wrestling with me, and it's great. I love it. But the thing is, I remember one of the first times I turned it on, and she was like, oh, yeah, I'll start watching this with you. It was them two talking. And Natalya just said, like, Nikki, you're beautiful, but I hate you. She's like, you actually watch this every week? And it took a lot more time for me to actually get her to understand this. It was a terrible starting point. I'm glad Sarah's kind of okay. I mean, she's okay with it. We still watch it. But it's just, oh my God, makes me want to take my microphone, break my window, and then put my head through the broken glass.
This you know, this would be a great feud in 2003. It really would. In 2003, this would fly. But also, it wouldn't have ended in a singles match. It would have ended in a mud wrestling match.
Oh, mud wrestling. I like that.
A bikini, what is it, mud wrestling match, and then a pillow fight.
Who do you think would win? Because Natalya, like, never shows her body. But, like, everyone wants to see
that, like, she wears that pleather bodysuit.
Catwoman.
If it was Nikki Bella would win because Vince, oh my God, Nikki Bella is hot. That's Nikki Bella win. But all in all, this is a feud that needs to end now. And from what we've seen, it looks like it is. It looks like they're going to start moving on to the feud they want for WrestleMania, which I, you know, don't mind the idea of a mixed tag match between The Miz and John Cena. I would have liked to have seen better things for The Miz, and really I would have liked to have seen John Cena take on The Undertaker. But, you know, I guess that's not the worst. I mean, both have had pretty good years. 2016 was a solid year for both guys, and 2017 has continued to be a solid year for The Miz. But, like, you build this thing up. I can't. This has been months and months and months, and you leave us with a double count out, and no one comes out looking any better. Like, that's the thing about most of these feuds. Like, even the pointless Corbin versus Dolph Ziggler feud, Corbin came out looking a little better. You know, this ranks up there close to the love triangle, where just no one came out looking good with the Rusev, Ziggler, Lana, Summer Rae love triangle. No one came out looking good in that. No one came out looking good in Bella versus Natalya, except maybe, you know, cocaine. That's about it. Moving on. Randy Orton versus Luke Harper. Arguably one of the best matches of the night, if not the best match of the night. But Steve, you were excited for this match. Is Randy Orton back?
Yeah. Okay, sorry. I got to stop doing my Luke Harper. That match was great. I had no problem with that. I love that whole match that they had. I'm a huge Luke Harper fan. I think he's awesome. He's a really athletic big dude, and I think his character is really cool. His like deranged kind of quiet character he's got going, I think is cool. Randy Orton, of course. I mean, my only problem with Orton is he kind of does the same thing every match, where he kind of just like slinks around. He keeps things real slow and methodical. I get he's supposed to be like a viper, and he's like losing strategy, but sometimes it irks me a little. But regardless, he still puts on good matches, and I really liked that match. I thought it was really good.
It's good for Luke Harper to be moved into like a, because this, I would consider this a main event feud. The Wyatt family thing is a main event feud, and it's good that Luke Harper is hanging around it. It shows that maybe potentially Luke Harper may see the Intercontinental Championship or maybe even a WWE Championship around his waist, and I think that's good for Luke Harper. Tom, at this point, we were probably about, I want to say, five Cosmopolitans in. So I think I was doing my Vince McMahon impression. But I mean, this match was very good from, you know, what I was able to see.
But it is very good, and I really do. I agree. I love Luke Harper, and I would love to see an IC title slapped on him. I would much rather him have it than Dean Ambrose. Randy Orton, I guess he's back. It's kind of weird. Why now? And you really don't see this happen to too many people where they kind of just don't do much, and then they get back on the main event scene. But that's the beauty of Randy Orton. He cannot do anything for a while. Yes, he was injured. I mean, he could come back. They just got to watch, though, if they do make him WWE champion, because that would be, what, his 13th? Just hear me out. That would be his 13th. And then if he gets 14, he ties Triple H. Do they really want to do that? And he's not going to beat Triple H 15. Then you're inching too close to Flair. So, yeah, they got to watch that. But I do like the feud. I like the match. I like Luke Harper. That seems to be a good storyline heading in a good direction.
Yeah, especially with what happened on SmackDown. We'll get to that, but yeah, I think we both agree, or all of us agree, Orton and Harper was a sensational match. 17 minutes of fun, definitely a high rewatch value on this. A bit of a shock here. I wasn't expecting this. I know there were some murmurs going into Elimination Chamber that it might happen, but Naomi, whose name is actually I Moan Backwards, I don't know if you guys know that, but she is now the WWE Women's SmackDown Champion. She beats Alexa Bliss, which breaks my heart because Alexa Bliss was on fire. She was a sensational champion. Steve, this kind of came out of the blue. Were you expecting this?
I was not expecting this at all. This totally took me by surprise too. But I popped big time for that ending. I was really happy to see Naomi take it. I mean, she's part of the first NXT. She's been around for so long. Her mic skills aren't the greatest, but she doesn't have mic-wise. She makes up with just pure athletic ability. That girl is so crazy athletic. And she probably has the best women's entrance in a long time. Maybe one of the best entrances, period, in wrestling right now. It never fails to get the crowd hyped up. It's always fun to watch. It's just really unique and different, and I really enjoy it. And ever since she came back with this new, like, club remix EDM feel with her theme and her and the black lights and the feel the glow thing, I feel like it's totally done wonders for her character, and I'm totally fine with her winning the title. I hope her and Alexa Bliss have a few more matches, because I liked the first one, and I think they could only improve from here. But yes, it was a surprise to see her win, but I was not upset by it in any way.
Again, a bit of a shock, but you're right. I mean, Naomi's been on fire, and that's what SmackDown's like an opportunity for people to go out and get gold and go out and shine, and it's worked wonders for a lot of people, and Naomi's one of them. Tom, were you taken back at all by the decision to put the title on Naomi?
Yeah, just because the SmackDown Women's Championship is relatively new, and you see what happened with the Raw one. Now, again, we know, I love Charlotte, but the hot potato game that Charlotte was playing with Sasha Banks was annoying, and it devalued the belt, so I didn't know if they were going to keep, you know, changing champions on SmackDown, but I think it's good enough. It's Alexa Bliss was fresh, but I always say, rather pull the plug too early than too late, because if you pull it too early, people still care about the championship. If you pull it too late, they stop. So, you know, she paid her dues. She's a good wrestler, good new gimmick. You know, I think the timing was actually right.
She becomes the third SmackDown Women's Champion, which, you know, Becky Lynch, now Alexa Bliss, now Naomi. I'm interested to see the program they set up for Mania. I'm hearing murmurs that Tamina is close to returning. I wonder what they bring her back as. If they bring her back as a heel, do you put her up against Naomi? Or do you go a different route? I'm interested. Maybe you do Naomi versus Natalya. I don't know. They have some options here. It's clear to me Alexa Bliss is not going to be in the cards for the title in Mania, which kind of hurts because she has had such a great year. But it looks like they want to get a different program going. Plus, Alexa Bliss is still very young. But we'll have to see. We'll talk a little bit more of that coming after the main event, which was great. Now, before we start talking about the main event, though, I want both of your guys' opinions on the new chamber, because it was unveiled before the pay-per-view that they were going to do a new elimination chamber. Now, Sean has a quite different opinion, and of course we'll talk to him next time when we do a Fastlane review. I thought the chamber was kind of interesting. It screams a toy deal that they're doing this to maybe get a capture a deal to sell it as a toy. Which was my first thought when I saw it. I was like, oh, new from Mattel featuring WWE. It's the Elimination Chamber, you know, and then having like the kids play with it. But all in all, though, it's safety proof, which allows for some different spots. But before I get into too many details, Tom, what was your opinion of the Elimination Chamber you saw, the new one?
You know, I liked it. I liked the new doors, I guess. I think the only thing I didn't like about it was the floors were actually floors. They weren't like steel crates or whatever you want to call them. But that being said, if you're not going to let the wrestlers bleed, why not just have a floor anyway? So I actually liked it, you know, out with the old, in with the new.
Steve?
I thought it was an oversized playpen, pretty much. It had good things about it. I thought the new door thing was cool. I liked how you could get on top of the chambers. That provided some new high spots. But the padded floors really killed it for me because they still sold it like it was the steel grate. It's obviously padded. It's not going to hurt as bad when you fall on it. I don't buy it that you're falling on steel grates. You don't get a back body drop and lay there and writhe in pain. It's pad. You're like, you can sell it, but you don't have to act like it's metal. And it's pretty obvious that those chains weren't metal either. I'm pretty sure those were plastic. And the Lexicon or whatever the heck the glass is called is pretty clearly a low-grade plastic, too.
Corbin, what was it? Corbin kicked something. Corbin kicked Ambrose into the glass, I think. Was that it?
Yeah, exactly. And it broke really, really super easily and was obvious.
It looked like a friggin' like shower curtain.
Exactly. It looked really cheap. And it's just like, it's essentially baby proof now. It just looks baby proof. The chains are plastic. The floor is padded. Like the overall design is cool, but I feel like they made it a little too safe. It's not the same. But
that's the thing. I agree how it is kind of like you said, baby proof, child proof. The design's cool, but it's so hard because again, the wrestlers can't bleed. So I get where they're coming from. Like, why do you like need to put the grate down? Which like. You're right though. Don't sell the floor like it's the grate.
Yeah, exactly. It's just I get the whole PG era thing. I mean, I have my qualms with it, but I put it to bed. But it's just like the more they PG stuff up, the more it makes me just like
it hurts because you know now they're gonna.
It hurts a gimmick like the Elimination Chamber.
It does because it's like they're selling this like you'll never be the same when you leave and you'll be hurting forever. It's like. I remember back in the day, like after the Elimination Chamber, everybody like that was involved would be limping to their matches or like wrapped up. On SmackDown, everyone was fine. No one was wrapped up. Nobody was limping. Everybody was totally fine, and there was no problems. And they still tried to sell the match like, you know, it changes lives. Like you're not the same superstar. Everyone seemed pretty damn fine to me. So I mean, I thought that those video packages were silly, but I mean, you know, it is what it is, I suppose.
Yeah. I guess, you know, I think the glaring issue for me with the new chamber, I mean, believe it or not, I'm fine with the padded floors because if it allows bigger bumps, and I guess I'm fine with that. I'll go over with the positives I view. I like the new doors, and I think we all agree the doors are pretty cool. I do like the fact that the top of the chamber now is an actual roof because before, like, I remember, I forget what it was. Kofi Kingston was going to do, or no, not Kofi Kingston. Someone was going to do a off the top of the cell or one of the pods, and their leg went into the pod, and someone grabbed it. And I'm thinking, that's an ACL injury waiting to happen. That's like if Seth Rollins went to go do that, and like his knee went through the chains on top of the pods or something like that. That is an ACL injury waiting to happen. That you can't have that. So. I like that. Plus, now we can get some cool, brawls going on top of there, and I like that. I like that the plexiglass, the giant plexiglass, is now on top, like where the top of the pod is. They have this so you can actually look in instead of it being a cage. So that allows some good viewing. And I think I'll agree with you. The glass on the pods, they need to fix that. They need to make it thicker. Or make it something, break easier or something, because when they threw Ambrose, or they did the Ambrose spot with Corbin, and the glass literally was like a friggin' shower curtain. That's pathetic. Okay, I get it. You don't want anyone to get concussions. I get it. You don't want anyone to get cut up. No more injuries. You want to try and get the most out of your wrestlers. I understand. But, like, that just looked so freaking like a cheap movie. Like, that's... You would see that in a college movie project. Like, oh, you threw him through the window, and then a quick shot, and the window's like a curtain, and that's it. Like, that was really bad. They need to fix that, but all in all, I mean, I kind of like the new chamber. I think it allows guys to come out safer, or it allows for a safer match, because at the end of the day, you know, I root for guys to beat the crap out of each other, but I don't want to see, you know, an injury. I don't want to see someone break their face, you know? That's just my opinion, but I agree with you, Steve. That glass was so pathetic. But anyway, we have our opinions of the new chamber. Let's have our opinion of the match. So it starts off... How did it start off? I believe it was Styles versus Cena was the way it started off. Am I correct on that?
I believe so.
It was Styles versus Cena.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It started off with AJ Styles versus John Cena. And then the first person to enter... was, I think, Dean. Dean comes out, and then Corbin comes out, then The Miz, then, okay. So it starts off Cena Styles, which I thought was a good, which was good, because that's, you know, it's a good way to progress that storyline, but without it actually being an official, like, match. Kind of like how the Royal Rumble has, like, matches within a match. This was, like, a match within the Elimination Chamber. I thought that was a good idea. Then we had Ambrose come out and continue the whole Ambrose versus Cena thing. That's another thing about this chamber is that every guy in this chamber legitimately had a storyline going with someone else. Like, okay, maybe Styles versus Wyatt wasn't something, or Wyatt versus Corbin, or even Wyatt versus The Miz, but Wyatt has a history with John Cena. Wyatt has a history with Dean Ambrose. And I buy that, you know? So, and they did a good job of progressing everything. Corbin's the first to get eliminated. He goes ballistic on Dean Ambrose. The Miz then eliminates Dean Ambrose. Corbin, of course, after he goes ballistic, is taken out. Then John Cena eliminates The Miz minutes.
Which
later.
I want to say, which I want to say was silly. That was just such a blatant squash. That was such a blatant squash of Miz. Like, just that was purely in there to set up their feud, or at least it felt like it was to set up their WrestleMania feud. Like, he pinned him so easily. Like so easily.
Which I agree with you. I didn't like, because if you're gonna build up that Mania feud, right now it's fairly one sided. You know, Miz gets pinned, Nikki Bella brawling with Natalya gets flour all over Maurice. It's like something kind of has to give here at some point where the Miz gets one back on Cena.
If they do the feud now too, it's like, well, John Cena pinned the Miz in 0.5 seconds. Like, it's not going to be much of a feud if Miz and Cena get in the ring together. And also, I just felt it kind of hurt Miz, because Miz has been on such a roll lately as a heel. He is like the quintessential heel in WWE right now. He just does such a good job at it. Like, he's such a good he does such a good job making people hate him. But he goes in and just gets immediately steamrolled by Cena. It was just like, well, there it goes. It was nice. It's gone now.
Yeah. I wouldn't say it hurts him too much, but I agree. It definitely is a bit of a road bump in terms of momentum. I also agree. It's not a great storytelling thing for that feud. But then this was the biggest shock I've ever seen. Bray Wyatt beats John Cena about as clean as a whistle.
That was beautiful. It was absolutely beautiful.
And mind you, I'm a few Cosmopolitans in at this point. I almost fell off the chair. I was like, wait, did I really just see that? Or is this like a joke? Cena gets beat by his sister Abigail. And then we get Styles versus Bray Wyatt, which is a very good 5-minute ordeal. Bray comes out the winner. Before I get any further, congratulations to Bray Wyatt. That man deserves it. But Steve, all in all, your opinion of the chamber match?
When Bray won, I was so... That's the happiest I've been watching a pay-per-view in such a long time. I was so so happy to see that. I was unbelievably happy to see that.
We got heel versus heel, and the crowd was going nuts.
Yeah, and people, you could just hear the genuine happy reaction to see Bray win that. People really wanted that, and it's been a long time overdue for him. It's really obvious. He does things his own way. He does things like the way he wants, and he's never settled or tried to change himself for anything. Ever since he felt so terrible with the whole Husky Harris gimmick, he realized, he's like, I'm never doing that to myself again. I'm never ever gonna do something that isn't me again. And it was obvious people didn't really like it. It was a little strange at first, but it grew on people. The fans loved it, and it took him to where he is now, and now he's the champ.
Tom, your opinion of the chamber match in a whole.
Okay, so the chamber match itself, you know, I guess maybe makes up for what people didn't like about the chamber. I thought it was good. The thing is with The Miz, too. He did get that kind of cheap pin on Ambrose, I believe it was. I'm not really sure. You could correct me if I'm wrong. But Miz kind of did get a little bit of, I don't know if you want to say heat, but that heel tactic of what he did. I love The Miz. I want to see him in a main event scene. Who knows if that's going to happen. Probably not. He's probably just going to get buried by John Cena. But also, I think because The Miz had such a great 2016, him not doing much in the chamber in 2017 doesn't mean too much. Corbin, although he did get eliminated early, did look strong. And, you know, let's just fast forward to the end. Well, like you said, it's about time. You know, Bray Wyatt's first singles gold. And beating John Cena clean as a whistle, I don't know what's going on. Remember, AJ Styles beat John Cena, and he got over. Bray Wyatt beat John Cena. I'm liking this new John Cena.
Dean Ambrose beat John Cena. Remember Dean Ambrose?
Dean Ambrose beat John Cena. It's the only problem I have with this is you got to keep in mind that Cena held the belt for 2 weeks. And, okay, there's been short reigns before, but that title that he got was 16. So the tying of Ric Flair's all-time record, the tying title reign was 2 weeks. That's the only problem I have with
it. True, but...
But that's like, that's me nitpicking. Yeah, it's irrelevant.
To me,
have to hate it because it's who I am. So, I have to find something not to like.
No, I completely agree. To me, I don't like the fact that they did the title change only for it to kind of go nowhere. I mean, it should have felt more monumental. I think this should have been something that happened at maybe the SummerSlam next year. But I'm willing to excuse it if this is what we see. It's almost like we have to play a game of trade here. It's like, okay, we'll allow you to do this with the product we love, but you have to give us something we want. So we allowed them to do the John Cena thing. What we got was a very good run from AJ Styles. I mean, AJ Styles champion was fantastic. That was months and months.
And Vince liked it too,
that's other thing. Is it got Styles over with Vince, which is huge. And now we get Bray Wyatt in return, and it looks like we're building to this crazy story with the Wyatt family. I'm gonna let you finish your point before we go to SmackDown, but it's like almost a trade thing we have going, Tom.
And I'm okay with that. And you know what? If this is Cena kind of on his way out, we'll see. You know, he's got to break the record, and when he breaks the record, I'm sorry, I kind of want to see a longer reign to really kind of, you know, that could kind of be seen as like, that could kind of be his heel thing. He could hold the belt for like, not this long, but hold it for around a year and just say, I'm the best there ever was. And then he finally loses it. And then again, he could lose it to Styles, Miz, Wyatt, Harper, not Orton. But you know what I mean? Lose it to another, I don't want to even say up and coming, but someone who's not from the Cena era.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be really cool. That'd be interesting. And that'd be a good way for Cena to go out.
A good changing of the guard, so to speak. You bring up Cena leaving soon. Reports are that he is going to take a break after WrestleMania, which looks like it's going to be a three-month thing. If that's the case, that begs the question for this. And I know if Sean was on the show, he would dog me for this, but the Cena heel turn has been something we've highly debated. Across wrestling ventures everywhere. People have been talking about this for a while. Maybe that 17th reign is the place where you turn Cena heel to get it and then progressively turn him back babyface when he loses it. So that way we appreciate it. You know, we get something we really want, Cena becomes the passes Ric Flair. You have that story going on. Cena had to become the dirtiest player to beat the dirtiest player. And then we slowly start to appreciate him. And then, of course, he can go on his merry way. Just an
idea. I think that makes a lot of sense, but it's the WWE. So don't expect that because it makes a lot of sense. But what I think might happen is Cena's going to be, oh, babyface, babyface. And for like the last month of his WWE career, the last month of that reign, he'll be heel. So we could taste it just enough to where we want it so much more, loses the title and retires. And it's just them dangling that heel turn in front of us. We get a little taste. It's on the tip of our tongue. We taste it ever so slightly, like a drop of sugar on our tongue. And it's so sweet. And then it's gone.
Steve's going to like this, but I've heard a rumor before they're planning with Cena, or at least the idea for a Cena heel turn would be almost to form like a new NWO.
Okay.
I mean, it would. The pieces are in place. He is this generation's Hulk Hogan. I mean, lately Cena's just been doing the tweener thing. Like, I know we're going to talk about SmackDown, but when he came out during Bray Wyatt's You Deserve It chance and totally ripped into the crowd and Bray Wyatt for taking this chance, it was like, wow, John, okay. I see where we're going now. He did it with AJ Styles, saying he was just a little indie guy who barely could do it in WWE. He's like, I wasn't made for the indies. I was made for the main event right away. It's like, wow, yeah. You really don't sound like you don't sound like a babyface right now, do you, John?
He's such a heel.
Well, let's not forget, guys. Let's not forget John Cena did make a cameo in Ready to Rumble, a WCW movie. Let's
not forget him working out. I'm just trying to think if they ever did a new NWO. So Cena obviously would be Hogan. I'm thinking like for Scott Hall, maybe The Miz for Scott Hall. And then who would be Nash?
It'd have to be someone big.
As Big Show's on his way out, Mark Henry's on his way out. Can't be Strowman because he's too new.
What about Orton? You know, Cena and Orton finally kind of team
Orton,
up.
Orton would be a good Scott Hall.
Honestly, yeah, it's hard because you have Cena Orton, so you would want another like that era guy. And I think who's the closest to that? You know, maybe The Miz, but like The Miz was a young goofball when Cena and Orton were at the top of their game.
If they ever could get him back, and I doubt they could, Batista would be a good Kevin Nash.
I can promise you right now, you will never see Batista as an active wrestler ever again. Maybe a little appearance, but you'll never see him.
He's going to be a Hall of Fame guy. That's it. But like that's like the only guy I could feel like if they were to do a new NWO, Cena, Orton, maybe Batista, but Batista doesn't want to come back anymore because that went well the last time he came back. But all in all, anyway, before we get into the whole fantasy future of this, future that, that's the Elimination Chamber. Now, the Fallout show for SmackDown was spectacular as always. SmackDown does a very good job of making these good shows. Looks like they're going towards a wrinkle in the Wyatt family storyline, and I'm really intrigued by it. Bray comes out, they do the main event. It's a triple threat: Styles, Cena for the WWE title Styles, Cena, Wyatt for the WWE title. And then afterwards, Orton comes out and pledges his allegiance to Bray, saying, despite the fact that he won the Royal Rumble, he will not use that opportunity to face his master, calling himself the slave or the servant, and he will not fight his master. It's intriguing because this is something I don't believe, Steve, we've ever seen with a Royal Rumble winner before, to refuse his opportunity.
It's pretty nuts. When that came out, I was like, well, there that goes. And then on Talking Smack, Daniel Bryan said that next week on SmackDown they would have a battle royal to determine a new number one contender. But I honestly feel like at Mania we are going to get a triple threat for the title.
And that's something I think we're interested in, because this Wyatt family storyline, at first, it was boring. And I think a lot of us were like, oh, here we go. Randy Orton's going to win again. Oh, my God. Bray's going to lose. But Bray's come out looking very strong. I mean, they have booked Bray very strong during this.
Well, Benny, I'm going to cut you off right here. When you said they're going to determine a new number one contender, you know, sometimes the booking's right in front of your face and you should just do it. So what are you going to do? You have Luke Harper win.
Yes.
And then Orton's going to be like, no, I'm not going to let Harper beat Bray. And then Bray's going to be like, oh, I can do this myself. But then Randy Orton's going to be like, oh, Randy Orton, voices in my head, cut off jackets with zippers. And then
cut off jackets with zippers.
But it's going to create an interesting dynamic. And the thing is, too, it'd be good for Harper, because if you remember when SmackDown first went live, I think there was a Fatal 4-Way match for a number one contender or the title itself, and Harper was in that, and it worked. So to have Harper win next week on SmackDown and put him in the Mania match, even though if we kind of know he's not going to win, it's good to see him there, and I think he'll do a
great,
good job there.
It's great,
and again,
for the
booking's
character.
Right in front of your face. Just do it.
But you're exactly correct. It looks like we're going to go for a triple threat. Just want to point out Bray, final three of the Royal Rumble. He gets that rub of being in the final four. He was in the final three. Beats John Cena on back-to-back nights, clean as a whistle both times. As a matter of fact, looks like Bray's being built up as a babyface, because when he came out, they did the Luke Harper ambush. He was put through a table, came back, fought through all of that, and pinned John Cena. Bray Wyatt, 2017. It looks like we're also going to go... Yeah, what a freaking year. Miz versus John Cena is the other feud we were talking about. If it's a singles match, if it's a mixed tag match, that is yet to be seen. Rumors are it looks like it's going to be a mixed tag match. It looks like this is going to be Nikki Bella's send-off, that neck injury a little bit too much. How do we feel about that, Steve? What do you think about a mixed tag match between Cena and The Miz?
Sorry, I threw up a little bit. stomach hurt for a second there. We should have Cena versus The Undertaker, for the love of God. I don't understand why they won't do this, especially considering the supposed plans for The Undertaker right now are Undertaker versus Roman Reigns. I just don't understand. Like,
yo, thank God Undertaker does not have his streak, because Reigns would have been the one to break it.
Oh, my God.
Just throw that out there. Just throwing
and
that
would,
out there. Going
I would have had sign. I would have had diarrhea on my couch. That would have just been it. I would just shit myself.
Steve, I want to ask you though, and Braun Strowman has probably never thrown up in his life, but if Braun Strowman was to throw up, how would it sound?
You know, it's a pretty loaded question, Benny. I mean, he's a guy, you know, he makes a lot of different noises. He yells, he roars and stuff, but I think if he threw up, it'd sound like this. And then, of course, the instrumentals would follow.
The instrumentals are the chunks of food coming out.
There's one, yeah, they're just there's one the every episode, they're just hitting, fellas.
They're just hitting the toilet like, duh, 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 duh.
It looks like we're moving towards Styles versus Shane McMahon.
I don't like this either.
Why? What does Styles have to gain for it? Now, if this was last year and it's like, oh, Styles is in WWE finally. Oh, okay.
He's this was last Shane year, I'd be a lot happier, because we would have been spared from Shane versus Undertaker, which Shawn has ripped that storyline up and down.
Because it makes no sense.
It is the dumbest storyline.
He lost and still was in control of the show.
And Undertaker said, well, why should I wrestle? And Vince goes, or else you'll never wrestle at WrestleMania again. And Undertaker's just kind of like, well.
LOL, okay.
Like, we all know Mark Calloway in the back of his head's just kind of like, I don't really want to do this anymore. I want to retire. I want to go home.
Back of his head, Mark Calloway's like, Jesus fucking Christ. what the hell am I doing?
It looks like we're also getting Corbin versus Ambrose for the IC title, which I dig.
I am okay with that.
Yes,
I dig.
I'm very okay with that.
Especially if it gets a hardcore stipulation or something along the lines of that, because Dean Ambrose and Corbin both shine when they can use weapons. Be interesting to see that. Maybe not a ladder
also,
match, but
I will be the first to admit that I am not a Baron Corbin fan, that I haven't been, but I do enjoy the way he's being built up right now. For him to drag out on SmackDown, when he dragged Dean Ambrose out by his jacket, I thought that was a good look, and it's like, oh, okay, now I can actually take Baron Corbin seriously now, because he's wearing a shirt and I don't have to look at his flabby stomach.
Well, do you know what's funny about Baron Corbin? Because this is apparently a thing. My buddy's a huge fan of metal music. You know Baron Corbin last year won Most Metal Athlete?
He did. He won that from not the Golden Gods Awards. What is it? I think it was something like that.
Yeah, so, like, he's being very metal right now, just, like, doing what I want. What's awesome, too, is he had a good chairs match at TLC.
Yeah, was that with Kalisto.
He had,
With Kalisto. No one has a good match with Kalisto ever.
Kalisto doesn't have a good match with Kalisto.
No one's ever had a good chairs match. Chairs mats are quintessentially stupid. Like, they're dumb and boring. And that chairs match was probably the greatest chairs match that's ever happened. So I will give him credit on that, too.
The end of days onto the chairs. Epic.
I would like to mention, though, I feel like the end of days is a stupid looking move. It looks like he's getting STO'd. It looks like he's taking the brunt of it. I wish he'd used the deep six as his finisher. I think that looks way cooler.
But I just want to point out this. It's the end of days is becoming like the RKO almost. Eventually, it's going to become like the RKO, which is like
he just hits it out of nowhere.
True, and it's a move that's so like ridiculously insane that people just love it. Like the RKO, when you think about it, the RKO makes zero sense. Like.
It's a diamond cutter. Jumping diamond cutter.
It's a jumping diamond cutter, but like if for instance in reality, if you did that to someone would just be like push you off. Like,
well, I mean 9 times out of 10 wrestling moves would not. I'd like to see you try to choke slam someone in real life.
I got choke slammed one time. It was the Super Bowl. The Eagles were versus the Patriots, and my brother missed the couch.
Oh,
so he choke slammed me on the floor.
Oh, God.
But it's okay because my boy Tom Brady won that. Benny, just want to rub that in your
face.
There
we go. I'm a Tom Brady fan, but that definitely hurt being an Eagles fan. It sucks. But
yeah, I wouldn't know what it's like losing to Tom Brady in the Super Bowl.
It sucks. You wouldn't know, you Giants fan. But the end of days is becoming like that ridiculously overtop move. I would not be surprised in a couple of years if the end of days becomes like a meme type move where it's like, oh,
well, I mean Baron Corbin's midsection has been a meme for a long time now.
I can't wait till he has a hair versus hair match because he's receding.
Oh my
god,
he needs it.
If
so
Baron
bad.
Corbin, I feel like if Baron Corbin shaved his head, he would look a lot better.
He would look more metal.
He'd look like a really tall like Corey Taylor or somebody,
or even just rock a bandana, you know?
Like, yeah, just throw a Hulkster on there, just fucking. Or just cover it up.
Or just do what remember the Undertaker had the whole, you know, biker phase. I'd be fine with that. It's fine.
I mean, Baron Corbin already has motorcycles in his entrance music.
Just go ahead.
That he does.
Put a bandana on him or a skull cap or something. Just, I don't like seeing the fact that his hairline is in the middle of his head. Women's scene is still kind of muffed up. It looks like we're getting Naomi versus Alexa Bliss. Yeah, you got the pun.
Good pun, Benny.
And the tag titles are all over the place. But that right now looks like the majority of the SmackDown storylines heading towards Mania. They are planning one of the SmackDown Super Shows in a couple of weeks where it's all these titles are going to be defended on it. Which I love the fact they do this. It's something they get from NXT, and it's fantastic that they do this. So that's SmackDown. Now moving on to Raw. Do we all saw the Emelina thing, right?
That was the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life. I laughed.
Aren't Zack Ryder still date?
No, they broke up.
Ah, poor guy.
They take pictures. I know. They're really chill about it. God.
They broke up. They broke up a while ago.
Because I saw him put depressing stuff on Instagram, and then nothing happens. So yeah, I didn't know. All right, sorry.
Yeah they broke up. But I was reading a lot of like just dirt sheet stuff, just kind of like just reading up about it. Apparently, Emma hated the whole Emelina thing because before she got hurt, her heel Emma character was just on a rise. It was going up and up. It was going up and up and up. And then she gets hurt, and then she gets pushed this like supermodel gimmick. Like almost like a bad knockoff of like a Eva Marie, which is hard to say a bad knockoff because Eva Marie is already bad. But
Eva Marie is bad at being herself.
Yeah, I just feel like she was kind of insulted, and then the whole debut thing kind of became a running joke, and then she just kind of said, like, you know what, I don't want to do it. I just want to be me. So they had her go out and just be like, well, I'm just gonna turn back into me now. So now we had to sit through 16 weeks of her metamorphosis into Emma.
Well, here's the thing with that whole Emma heel dynamic you were talking about. Remember, she was on the up and up, and who was the heel to kind of replace her? Dana Brooke.
Oh, my God.
If you remember that, and that's, yeah. Exactly. But yeah, so I think Emma finally convinced people that's like, hey, remember how good I was and remember what you replaced me with? Let me try to be me again.
What's Dana Brooke doing now?
Dana Brooke, the first time I'd seen her in forever was on Raw when she tried to interfere in the women's championship match.
Do you know it's going to be awful? She's going to get drafted to SmackDown in the next draft, and
no.
They're going to try to put her the title.
No, don't.
No, it's
don't
true.
You,
it's true.
Don't you? Benny. Don't you do? No, no.
Don't you put that? Don't put that voodoo on me, Ricky
don't
Bobby?
Don't you put that voodoo on me, Thomas DiNapoli? But yeah, the Emelina thing—that is just awful, and everyone involved.
It's just plain silly.
Everyone involved should feel bad. That's all. Moving on, the women's title goes to Bayley in a little bit of a shock. But at the same time, that was supposed to be Mania.
I was so torn because seeing Bayley win that title was just so satisfying. But it was so soured by the fact that that title is a joke. That title is literally a joke. It is just... It's hot. It is a over-glorified game of hot potatoes.
Is this?
Oh God, who's having diarrhea?
Someone's eating snacks. Oh my God, it's George Lucas. No, but
sorry, that was me. I didn't eat dinner.
Hey guys, what's going on?
All right, guys, what's going on? Does the Raw women's division suffer because it's only like four women deep at this point? Like, part of me thinks that's the reason. Like, you have Sasha Banks and Bayley are the only two baby faces. Summer Rae's hurt. Emma's hurt. Or Emma's in La La Land. Dana Brooke can't wrestle. And Nia Jax is way too green.
Nia Jax is way too green, and you're not going to have heel versus heel.
Yeah. Well, she's way too green to do anything with. So,
and she also has a new finisher to botch every week, so...
You know what? I would not be surprised if she turns into like a person that starts to seriously hurt people. But it's just they need so much help on Raw with their women's division. Part of me thought maybe they would rush the Asuka call up just to try and get a competitor against Charlotte. But the other part of me says that's something that needs to be more special. Oh my God, Raw is in dire straits.
Well, you
that
know
being
the thing
said,
I think with Raw's.
Before I let you go, Tom. That being said, this was not the time to do a title change.
No,
it just was not the time to do this at all because you took all of the glory off of Bayley. Now there have been murmurs that next week on Raw they're going to do the whole but it shouldn't have gone that way because of this. So Bayley, you have 1 week reign of the title, but it's not anything. Charlotte never lost it. If they do that. That's dumb. Tom.
I think the thing is, now again, I love Charlotte, but I think she really is just so, so good that it's hard to have a really good women's division because she sets the bar so high in the ring with her promos. Even she brought Dana Brooke around for a while. Well, on SmackDown, yeah, Alexa Bliss is good. Yeah, Naomi's good. Yeah, yeah, Becky Lynch is good.
Yeah, Natalya's
good.
No one's
like
that
good. It's
a bunch
of good. And I think a bunch of good, you can mix and match. But when you have a great in Charlotte, you could put Sasha and Bayley in that category if you want. But then everyone else is second tier, and it makes the whole booking process a lot harder.
Yeah, you make a good point. Steve, do you have any opinion?
This whole title picture is silly to me. Like, it's just I don't take the title seriously anymore. Like,
oh,
my whole problem with this whole thing is just like this whole like Charlotte being the queen of pay-per-views thing. It's like, yeah, but if you lose on Raw, like what's the point? Like, and more people watch Raws than the pay-per-views. Like, so what if you always win at pay-per-views, but you know at Raw you lose? Like, it's just silly, and to have so many switches like just totally delegitimizes the title. Like, it's just I'm fed up. I'm really fed up with it.
You bring up a point about Charlotte on Raw. You would think that at some point the champion would just be like, oh, wait, I don't win on Raws. Well, guess what I'm not going to do? Wrestle with the title on the line on a Raw. I'm going to do everything I can to not do that. And the other thing I want to point up is what the hell happened to the Dana Brooke thing? Like, The Raw women's division is in dire straits. They need help. Hopefully the next draft, and they're planning on doing it sometime in July, which is fairly quickly, needs to happen because they need some talent over there. Moving on, Reigns versus Strowman. They've done a good job of booking this feud. I fear the way it's going to go. And
I'm not ready for Braun to lose a Fastlane. No,
he's been on such a roll. For him to lose at Fastlane, maybe they can do like I really don't want this, but Undertaker comes in and screws Reigns, and that's part of the feud. I don't know. That's something, and that's a way to keep Braun looking strong for the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royale, which is where he's going to be. It's a stepping stone.
Guess what's interesting? Remember when Undertaker came back that he was on SmackDown, and now he's on Raw because SmackDown was doing so well, but casual fans stopped tuning into Raw. So they needed a reason for people to tune in, so they put Undertaker there. And like you said, now it's like, oh, well, what do you do with Undertaker? Well, you know, Reigns. I said it before, I'll say it again. Thank God Undertaker lost his streak. Like it or not at the time, it would be Reigns right now, and I think we're all happy that it's not going to be Reigns to break the streak.
You know what? We debated a lot on the show about the streak. Sean and a lot of – I mean, I think we all would agree. Breaking the streak was something that should have never happened, but they've proven since then that Lesnar is clearly the right guy to have done it because, my God, the options that came afterwards.
Well, Taker wanted to lose it to Punk. But
there, have been quite a few guys that Taker wanted to lose to. Murmurs that he wanted to lose it to Randy Orton for the Legend Killer gimmick. Murmurs that he wanted to lose it to Punk. Murmurs that he was the one that decided to do it to Lesnar. People have argued that Bray Wyatt could have been a guy in the mix, but it just never really came to fruition. Plus,
quick little thing.
Very
Brock
odd.
Lesnar.
Very odd that he wrestles Bray Wyatt and then goes back to the Lesnar feud. Mind you, Lesnar was wrestling on the same Mania as the Bray Wyatt. Very odd. Very odd.
Very odd. Speaking of Brock Lesnar, real quick, apparently, we all know he retired from UFC because, you know, steroids, he got banned. Apparently, I believe via Forbes, he's going to have more of a heavy schedule. So maybe Universal title somewhere in there. You got to legitimize that. Who better than Lesnar? I'm just saying. It's out there.
Yeah,
out.
We'll get to that. It's actually our next point, but...
nice segue.
Yeah, not very nice segue. It's like you have the rundown. It's like all of us have the rundown. This is amazing. We moved to the Festival of Friendship. And
moment of silence?
Yeah, I think this is a moment of silence. That's all the moment of silence gets. I think we all can agree, Steve, Tom, that was probably one of the best segments a Raw has had in a very long time. It puts you on an emotional roller coaster. You started out, you were laughing, you were having a good time. You know, they had the painting, I forget the actual name of the painting, but the one where their hands are outstretched, and then the whole, it's art, you don't need pants, and the Guggenheim statue, and the whole, the Gilbert, like, there were so many funny moments. And they kept rattling them off, one after the other, and then the heartbreak, the Jericho pouring his heart out to Owens, and then the makes every scene better. Little Celine Dion. Owens gives Jericho a gift.
Why, Kale? Why did you do it?
Jericho takes the gift out, and it's a list. It's the list of Kevin Owens, and there's one name on that list, and it's Chris Jericho.
That segment was literally brilliant. It did a lot of things for me because one, it was a great spike to add to the Jericho Owens feud that they want to build. It was a great way to jumpstart that, and it also for me, it was a good reminder to everybody like this is who Kevin Owens is. He isn't a little whiny chicken crap heel. He's not a goofy, like, comedy act. Like, this is Kevin Owens.
Yes.
A backstabbing, ruthless, lying traitor.
Who will destroy
anybody who is in his way, and even if it's his friends. This was the Kevin Owens in NXT who obliterated Sami Zayn and just tore a path through NXT as champion.
This feud. It was feud of the year, I believe, one of the feuds of the year for 2016, and it's going to be feud of the year for 2017, and it's going to wrap up well before the end of the year. This, everyone coming out of this feud is looking phenomenal. I missed, believe it or not, so much happened in the Festival of Friendship. I missed one of the funniest moments when they put Friendship the Magician, which was freaking hysterical, by the way, a magician named Friendship.
Friendship the Magician, I was laughing so, because it's just like his name is Friendship.
He's on
sometimes
the list.
Sometimes corny is good.
They put him on the list, and now there is a list where the names Tom Brady and Friendship the Magician are back to back.
And Bill Goldberg's on there.
Bill Goldberg is on there. What is it?
Ray Space in the fourth row or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, like the everything about this feud has been amazing.
The only problem with this Jericho Owens thing that I have is I didn't even think Jericho was going to make Mania. I guess he is now, but he's got a lot of commitments with his bands coming up, and I think
with Fozzy, that's going to be
a problem, and I think we're not going to get as much as we want out of this.
True, but I think Mania. This is a feud that needs one match and one match only, and that's a Mania match. Unfortunately, it looks like it's not going to be the Universal title, which we can go back and forth on. It looks like it's going to be the United States title. But at the end of the day...
I'd like to point out, too, that I've read a few reports, too. I don't know if it was on the run or not, but it looks like Triple H is building a new stable, which will be him, Kevin Owens, and Samoa Joe, and they're going to be like a top heel, just like destructive heel stable, which I have no problem with. I think it will be an awesome look.
I love that.
It'll get Kevin Owens away from his goofy, like, crappy heel run that he's had. Because, I mean, I love Kevin Owens, but he's just, like, he's supposed to be, like, a scary, like, his shirt says fight on it. And all he does is whine and, like, run away. And, like, the Kevin Owens, Chris Jericho friendship thing was really cool, but sometimes I feel like it hurt Kevin Owens because it required him to be, like, a whiny, like, running away, scaredy cat type heel when he should be, like, a F you in your face,
yeah,
like beat you up kind of heel.
He's a bully. He's a schoolyard bully. And schoolyard bullies don't run away. If the murmurs for that are true, and I think they might have to add a couple more people to that stable. Maybe, I don't know, the Revival would be interesting. But that's a good way to go. I think this is a story that will benefit any title that it's going to be on. The United States title needed it after Roman Reigns did a great job. All in all, this is a feud that it's one of the best feuds, I think, in this era of wrestling. It's just fantastic. Everything about it has been so great. It begs the question, though, would it make storyline sense at Fastlane? And we'll get to the Fastlane card in a second, but would it make storyline sense in Fastlane if Jericho came out and screwed Goldberg out of the title so that way maybe he gets a chance at the title, the Universal title?
I don't know. I mean, the whole Goldberg versus Owens thing has a lot of interesting dynamics because let's say Brock gets involved and disqualifies Goldberg, so then their match at Mania is not for the title, which I don't think they would do. I just know in this match there's going to be some kind of interference because it's written on the wall at this point. But I really feel like the match that they want to be money at WrestleMania is Goldberg versus for Lesnar for that title because it needs to be legitimized because it's new. And it's not hated on as much as it was, but I feel like it's still not taken as seriously.
No.
But there's a lot of interesting, dynamics to the Goldberg Owens match at Fastlane now, because does Lesnar get involved? Does Jericho come back and seek vengeance for what Kevin Owens did to him? It's like there's just a lot of interesting there's a lot of interesting dynamics to it.
Raw and SmackDown have stepped their game up on the road for WrestleMania. Anyway, mentioned Fastlane, the card so far, three matches. Looks like we're definitely going to get some more. But Neville versus Jack Gallagher for the Cruiserweight Championship. Interesting story there. Neville's obviously going to win. Gallagher's been fantastic, by the way. Hey, Vince, that's how you do the vaudevillain gimmick.
Thank you.
That's right there. Jack Gallagher, exactly.
We have the Mountain of Meat match versus Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns. Men smashing each other with things. That's what that match is going to be. And then we have Goldberg in action against Kevin Owens.
A little homoerotic there.
Oh, yeah. I just want to point out, one of those men in that match has their nipples pierced, and I'll leave that up for your, you know, interpretation.
It's Braun Strowman. You can see it through his singlet every time he wrestles.
It's amazing. And then a Goldberg in action against Kevin Owens for Universal Championship. It looks like we may get a Zayn versus Jericho, and then Samoa Joe might be in action as well.
Well, but, here's the thing with Goldberg and Owens. Remember, Goldberg with the Lesnar squash, if you want to call it, then eliminates him in the Rumble. Goldberg hasn't taken bumps yet.
No.
So if we're going to get interference, I'm looking out for it early.
Even his elimination, wasn't a big bump.
No, I'm looking for an early interference. I don't know if I said elimination. I meant interference. I'm looking for early interference in that match to maybe have Goldberg only go 6 or 7 minutes. If that.
Yeah, I was reading something that people are afraid that he would Goldberg would squash Kevin Owens, but I don't think they would do that to Kevin Owens, because especially after this whole the friendship festival thing, or the celebration of friendship thing, I feel like that would just totally be a total step in the wrong direction, because he just proved, like I said, he just proved that he's a dominant, scary heel, and that's who he really is. For him to go out and get squashed by Goldberg would kind of be like, well, there that goes. There goes all the heat that was made through that.
Maybe, just maybe, this is the way it might play out. So, Goldberg enters, and Kevin Owens enters. They're doing their thing in the ring. The referee is positioning himself, and then Owens runs behind the referee as Goldberg's trying to spear him. Spears the referee. Out comes Lesnar. Lesnar attacks Goldberg. Then Owens tries to pin Goldberg, can't get him. Jericho comes out, beats down Owens for a little bit. That draws the match out to probably about 6-7 minutes. Goldberg spears Owens, ball game, that's it. Maybe Samoa Joe gets involved, because I don't believe they have any programs lined up for him at Fastlane yet, but
I don't think it would make any sense for him to get involved, especially if he's going to be in a stable with Kevin Owens.
Yeah, it wouldn't make anything, but again, you never know with Joe. Though Joe might get involved with Jericho versus Sami Zayn, because it looks like maybe for Mania, that might be the program they go with. But anyway, that's Fastlane, that's Raw, that's SmackDown, that's Elimination Chamber. It's time for story time, everyone's favorite part of the show. Anyway, we have some new WWE Hall of Famers to go with Kurt Angle. Recently announced, the Rock and Roll Express are going in. So congratulations to those guys who most recently wrestled on TNA.
Wow.
Interesting. They've been treating TNA guys or guys that have wrestled on TNA very well. So two TNA teams are going in. And Teddy Long as well is a new WWE Hall of Famer. So those are the two new ones. We still don't know. The rest of the class has still got to wait. Yeah, play him. My favorite SmackDown GM. My favorite
holla, holla,
SmackDown. Holla, 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 playa.
It's time for a tag team match.
And I was just going to say that it's amazing they're putting a tag team and Teddy Long in at the same time. It's amazing. Maybe he's going to set up a match with the Rock and Roll Express. I don't know. But those are the tag teams. And then normally we don't have much movie news to talk about here on the wrestling show. We normally reserve that for the flagship. But we have some movie news. They're making an Andre the Giant documentary. Bill Simmons, if you guys are familiar with him, he used to do a lot on ESPN before getting fired because he had the audacity to defend women's rights. He is going to be involved in the documentary, so interesting to see where he fits. They're also making a Paige movie. That's our excitement for the Paige movie.
It's a cool story considering her family is just so – her family literally like lives, breathes, and sleeps wrestling. Paige took her first bump while she was in her mother's womb because her mother was pregnant with her and she didn't know.
Oh, my God.
I mean, they literally just embody wrestling. Like, they all wrestle and they all live it and they all do it. And it's they're a crazy, crazy talented family, and I think it's really cool. But given how – the relationship with Paige is right now. For them to announce something like this is pretty crazy, because I know WWE isn't the main producer, but they're still going to be working on it with them. Mm-hmm. Even though the Rock's production company is going to be taking the majority control, I still think it's crazy that WWE is going to even help with this at all, considering how she's kind of not in the best graces with the company, so to speak. But I'll see it. I think it'll be interesting. I'm very interested in the Andre the Giant biopic.
Documentary.
I think that'll be cool. I was also reading that Vince Vaughn has actually made claims that he would like to play Jake the Snake Roberts in an upcoming documentary about him.
Vince Vaughn as Jake
Snake
Roberts.
I cannot see Vince Vaughn as Jake the Snake. Okay. I really can't.
Jake the Snake, he had like this very like cold charisma. Where like he like almost Bray Wyatt esque, where he was like he would talk to you.
The thing about Jake that was so crazy for me is he never yelled or raised his voice ever.
It was very cold,
almost like a whisper, so cold and quietly that it was like, oh god, he's gonna kill me.
It was like a very cerebral, very like I'm gonna kick your ass. What I'm gonna do is first I'm gonna take your head, and I'm gonna smash it into the floor, and then I'm gonna stomp your face in. It was very like. It was scary. Vince Vaughn to me is not scary. His acting is scary. Scary bad, but anyway.
I love Wedding Crashers. It's really
Wedding Crashers is great, but can you imagine Vince Vaughn from Wedding Crashers as Jake the Snake Roberts?
Want to wrestle? You want to do? You want to play? You want to play just the tip, just for a second, just to see how it feels. What do you want to do?
Owen,
son of a bitch.
Owen Wilson would be the snake and just go, oh wow,
oh
wow,
oh
wow, that's amazing, oh wow.
Jake, I really like what you're doing with me in the ring. This is great. I get to be in front of all these people.
Oh wow, look at that. It's a ring post.
Wow, that's a really good Owen Wilson.
Well, thanks. You know, I've been working on it for a while, I guess.
Oh wow, you put that man through a table. Oh wow,
that must have hurt.
If you guys ever want a great YouTube clip, you just look up, it's like 2 hours of Owen Wilson going, oh wow,
wow,
wow, wow. Oh wow. So those are the movies, Andre the Giant and Paige, 2017 for you in a nutshell. More Paige news, and Steve, this is like a story for you that's like your baby. But what's this update with Paige?
I mean, I've said on the podcast before, I even with all of her crazy choices now, I love Paige. First of all, she's gorgeous. I love English women. And she's insanely talented as a wrestler. And she's a very tough woman. She's very strong. Like, she's been through a lot. And she could definitely hold her own in a real fight. That being said, Alberto Del Rio has been pushing her to take up a career in mixed martial arts. Now,
2017.
I don't know how this would be approached. I know that she's going for a lower level company, unlike CM Punk in the UFC, which is understandable because she does not have the name or the marketability that CM Punk has.
No.
If this does proceed, I would like to see how long she takes to train. I would like to see if she has any natural gift towards it. But right now, to me, this seems silly. To me, this seems very, very silly and very dangerous. Women mixed martial arts fighters are much more dangerous than the men. I feel like even though they're starting to get more notoriety, you know, with the UFC having women division, I feel like they still feel like they have a lot left to prove.
Mm-hmm.
They are tenacious. They're tough. They're very scary human beings. And the last thing they're going to want to see is a little pale-skinned pretty girl from WWE walking into their sport thinking that she can make a living off this. That being said, Paige is a very strong girl. She's very tough. I feel like she has just a natural grit to her. I feel like she could pick this up. I know that she's very skilled at learning physical tasks. I know she does a good job with good workloads and stuff. She picked up wrestling incredibly easy, but that's because she grew up around it. The only thing that worries me too is also the state of her neck.
I was going to bring that up. She's severely injured right now.
Yeah, her neck is pretty messed up. Her whole body is actually a mess. This girl's been wrestling since she was, like I said, she took her first bump when she was in utero. But I mean, throughout her born life, she has been wrestling since she was, I think, 12 or 13, maybe 11. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong. Her body is pretty shot. It's pretty messed up for a girl that's younger than me, actually, or yeah, a little bit younger than me. Her body is very war torn and battered. So I would only be worried if she gets caught in some kind of clinch, or she catches a trip or a slam and she lands on that neck, because there's no bumps in mixed martial arts. It's you're going down hard. You're going to get smashed.
But, Remember when we were talking about cocaine before? Let's talk about Paige and cocaine in Alberto Del Rio. There's got to be some kind of trafficking going on with
him. He was on SmackDown.
A lot of people have noticed, and I have too, but ever since she got with Alberto Del Rio, there have been pictures for her where she seemed very gaunt, very skinny,
yes.
Not looking very healthy.
No.
The booty that I loved so much is almost gone.
Yep.
They've
come out a little bit and said, "Oh, the neck injury has caused her to take time off of the gym." But at the same time,
people know what drugs make you look
yes.
like. Like people know what drugs make you look like.
Yes.
And she, like, I hate to say it, and I really hope that this is a false accusation, but to me, she looks like she's on drugs.
Yes.
And I mean, it's no strange thing to say that Alberto Del Rio has had his problems with substances in the past.
He's out of the WWE. He is no longer around. You know, people
He's no longer affiliated with any company
yes.
that will require him to complete any kind of wellness.
And this is what scares me with Paige as well, is because when the WWE, she's been sheltered. You know, it's a environment that monitors what you do, and that's the same with Del Rio. Now they're not monitored. He can go out and smash an eight ball and it's no one's gonna say anything. We had our issues with the Del Rio relationship, and it's not just because we're jealous. Oh my god, we love Paige.
We never had a chance with her in the first
we
place.
Are not we are not 13-year-old teenagers that are moody. We are not sex crazed boys. That's not what we are. We are men. We are over 20 years old. We understand.
Well, you guys are over 20.
You're getting there. You're on your way.
Tom, you're 16. It's okay.
Yeah, easy.
But we understand the way love works, okay? We understand Paige is out of our league. We as fans don't want to see her go down this road. So it's not a matter of she shouldn't love him. It's a matter of he is the worst guy that she could have possibly ended up with. And I'm not talking about in terms of him. I'm talking about him as a person. He's just not a good... Del Rio is just not a good person.
He's a dick.
He really is.
He's a prick. It's just like...
There are stories after story about this guy being not a good guy. He's not even divorced from his wife. It's not finalized. Like, there are issues out the wazoo with this.
And also, Paige's family has made it pretty public that they don't like Del Rio. Like, when he came over to England and met the family and stuff, Paige's dad made it very publicly obvious that he did not like Del Rio. He made it very public that he didn't. I feel like her brothers weren't very big fans of him either. No. To me, even now, after all this time and like all this time they've been together and stuff, something still feels wrong to me about this relationship. I don't know what it is. It's not the jealous fanboy in me. I mean, I love her to death, and I think she's gorgeous, but it's not the jealous fanboy in me. Something just feels off. Like, he's an old man, and she's my age.
Okay, perfect. I'm looking this up right now. Del Rio's 39, Paige is 24. Benny, you also mentioned how Del Rio's divorce is not over. It's pending. Not only that, Del Rio has 3 children.
Also, the exact timeline is a little bit in question.
Yeah, I feel like there was some. I feel like there was some infidelity on Alberto Del Rio's part, because there were some very public pictures of Del Rio and Paige in the beginning at a beach sharing awkward kisses that I remember very clearly. And I remember Sean and I saying to each other, Del Rio's married. Like, what's going on here?" And then this whole thing exploded. Paige got hurt and took time off, and then she got the poppy tattoo on her finger, which she went out of her way to say on her Superstar Inc. special on the network. She went, sometimes you just get silly tattoos, like how I got Poppy on my face.
It's a silly tattoo. No, it's not. It's
no, it's, you know who that's for. You know exactly who that's for.
It's if you told me, if like for instance, Tom, if you told me that Paige's actual age was 15, I would buy it because that's the way she's acting right now. This is a 15-year-old acting out against her family, acting out against people that are looking out for her best interest, which, okay, maybe we don't agree with the WWE, but in this case, the WWE is 100% right with this. Okay.
Every picture I'm looking up on Google right now of Del Rio and Paige, he looks either A, really uncomfortable and awkward, or B, like that quintessential like douchey guy who's like smiling and just like, yeah, I'm gonna bang her tonight. Like nothing looks like love. When you see love, you could see it in people's eyes. Yeah. And let's not say, who the hell am I? I'm not a love expert at all. But you could see it in people's eyes. You don't have to be the one in love to know two people are in love. He just looks awkward and like, yeah, I get to bang her. No feelings. Doesn't look like it.
It's sickening, and it puts a pit in our stomach because I think we all, like, again, Steve, myself, you, we've watched WWE for a while. Paige has been someone that we've been infatuated with as a performer, someone we've grown watching. Like, we've spent quite a while with Paige. And now we're watching her tear her career apart. This is something, again, like, and if the drug allegations are true, like, this is a guy, substance abuse. Paige is not looking exactly, you know, the healthiest anymore. If she's indeed on something, this isn't a case of romance and love and heartbreak. This is a case of life or death. You know, Rick James said it.
I don't think that she'll die.
Cocaine
per se,
is
but
one
I think
hell
her,
of a drug.
I think her career may die if she's not careful. Because I just, like, she could come back to WWE and work her way back into the good graces. I mean, she still has a pretty loyal fan base. She's a great wrestler.
Yes, I just want to point out the good graces. It's interesting they're going the route of the movie, and I wanted to bring this up during the movie because it seems like WWE is trying very hard to like they are giving her a really long leash with this whole thing.
Although, to be fair, the movie is not about her.
No,
it's about her family.
It's about her whole family. I understand. But it comes off as maybe they're trying to step this in the right direction.
It feels like it to me. I mean, I'm sure that Del Rio has planted all kinds of crap in her head about, you know, the WWE and, like, what a crappy company it is and, like, how it's treated him and, like, how she shouldn't be a part of it because how it treated him. And I feel like it's just, like, you know, I just feel like it's not...
How it treated him.
Fair.
He was a world champion.
Well, I mean, his last reign. I
understand. He was, but again, he was a world champion. He at one point was at the top of the company. Things unfortunately went wrong. I remember the writer with the racist comment, the smack. That's inexcusable. The WWE is in the wrong of that, but they made amends. He came back. He was the United States champion. Wasn't exactly booked right. Brought him back as a heel, which was not exactly great. But he went to SmackDown. He could, you know, he could have done something on SmackDown. Things could have gone somewhere. This was, you know, the problem with the WWE when he came back was that there were way too many people on a handful of shows.
Let's not forget, isn't Del Rio the one who broke CM Punk's 434-day reign?
Yep.
Yes, he was.
So
yeah.
He broke the reign, and I read a rumor somewhere that when Del Rio came back after the racist comment, he was promised a heel run with Paul Heyman. He didn't get that. I don't know how true that is. Just something I read.
I mean, I feel like that would be a good promise, and to not get that would be very upsetting.
I'm not going to
have that last run sour what was a very good and successful WWE career.
And don't go out and try to jump because that, like let's look at the facts. You know, at some point, you know, maybe 20 years down the road, Del Rio is going to be a guy that maybe you consider for the WWE Hall of Fame. You know, I'm not going to sit here and say he's a slam dunk Hall of Famer, but you know, if they've put fringe guys in before, Billy Graham is in the WWE Hall of Fame. Billy Graham is a great wrestler, but not too many people remember Billy Graham, you know. So Del Rio's a guy that has had moments. He's had some big moments. Of course, breaking CM Punk's record. He was a part of the Ziggler cash-in, which is one of the biggest moments in the history of the WWE. He is a guy that is a fringe Hall of Famer. Sean, of course, will probably debate me on this, but he's a guy that's going to be in the conversation. It's a shame that the relationship is sour this much. Now, if they can bring Bret Hart back, which is the status quo for failed relationships, which, of course, with this Montreal Screwjob, the spitting on Vince McMahon.
Or if they could bring Ultimate Warrior back.
Yes. If they can bring Ultimate Warrior back, they can bring anyone back, which is why I look at CM Punk and go, dude, you're going to be back at some point.
I just hope it's sooner rather than later to where he could still wrestle and it means something.
I would like that as well, but no relationship is beyond the point of souring with the WWE. They will find a way to bring you back. Bill Goldberg is back in the WWE and wrestling.
Well, do you even hear Hulk Hogan trying to come back again? Yes. And they're having talks like
it's going to happen.
I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if we see him at Mania this year.
I wouldn't be shocked at all.
I've been reading that.
Would not be shocked at all. Hopefully, because they had some rumors about him coming back this month, and I went, oh, not a great time to bring him back. Just not a great time right now, you know, because of what he said. But it with me, it's more of like there's no relationship that WWE can't repair. So Del Rio doing this, for me, it looks like this. The WWE has their arms open. They want him to come back. They want everything to be smoothed over. I do remember, though, when this whole thing went down with Del Rio and the WWE, they said that I think there was an agreement that they weren't going to talk smack on each other. Well, lo and behold, that's just what happens. But anyway, that is all we have for today's show. It's interesting we end with the Page MMA thing because going next week, we will have a UFC show for you. It will be me, Tom, Steve. We'll have that coming up. We have a lot to talk about. Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor, the fight that we said would never happen. Some interesting developments. We'll talk about that next week. For now, though, that does it for me, Benny, myself, Steve, and Tom. Thank you very much again for joining us this week on the show. Once again, plug your podcast you're from, and we'll send you on your way, buddy.
All right, Benny, thanks for having me. Anytime, I would love to be on. Everyone go on either TuneIn Radio or Podbean. Follow me on Twitter at TNAPS37. It's the M&T Show, like M&T Bank, but M&T Show. It's my buddy Mike and myself. We talk about wrestling, but we also mix in some other sports. We'll be talking about wrestling when the NHL playoffs come. We'll mix in a little baseball when it comes. Episodes run typically for about 20 to 25 minutes, so it's a much more condensed show, but it's a good time. Check us out.
And that does it for all of us here at Blah Blah Wrestling. We'll be talking to you next week with the UFC show. Take care.